Welcome to DC On Screen, a podcast that talks about all of the DC Universe properties being brought to film and television, properties that have been brought to film and television. I am David C. Robertson. This is my co-host, Jason.
Hello.
Today, we are talking about Constantine. We're going to do a recap slash review situation. And we're doing it because Constantine, excitedly, even after cancellation, is going to be showing up on Arrow. How do you feel about
that? He's just too good to put down. He is. This guy was a lot of fun to watch, man. And I know we're not going to get to wrap up the heaven and hell's worth of loose ends that still remain in Constantine. I know that may never happen. With any luck, DC Comics will shoot us a one-off for a couple of actual pages. I'll take them. Mm-hmm. Now, they may argue that they've already done that story before, because they are drawing on some of the books to get these stories. But, I wouldn't mind a genuine kind of retake on it.
Right. I'm hoping for, at best, a couple of lines in Arrow, saying, Constantine could make a comment or something about how he had an angel that betrayed him or something. I don't know.
I'm hoping there's at least... All right, my most ardent desire is that... And they've said specifically one shot. They're trying to manage our expectations here. They don't want you to go into the episode thinking that you were going to get the last episode of Constantine instead of an Arrow. No, you're getting Arrow, and it's going to focus on Sarah Lance, so... I'm glad they did have Constantine, because this is the episode that I was looking least forward to.
Right.
Because it was already going to have Sarah Lance in it, and just... I didn't know how the whole White Canary thing happened. But anyway, so they're going to have Constantine, which is going to make that better. But I'm glad they actually went out and straight up said, we're not doing a couple things. Because, yeah, I would rather not have that expectation. Now I can just sit back and enjoy Matt Ryan playing the fuck out of this character for one more go.
Yeah, and, at the same time, they're trying to manage our expectations, but they are also kind of teasing and saying, like, hey, man, we might be over on The Flash at some point.
Mm-hmm.
We might, be over on, pop over to Legends of Tomorrow or something. I have every hope that Matt Ryan's Constantine shows up on as many things as we can get him on. Shit, man, let's do a movie of the week. Let's do,
I know. It's surprising. For only 13 episodes, they made a good show. And I've forgotten the numbers on this. I really have. Do you have the numbers on the ratings?
Let's see. The first episode was 4.28 million people.
Mm-hmm.
The second episode is 3.06 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's 3.14, 3.47, 3.54, 3.34, 3.17, 3.30, 3.06, 3.47, 3.29, 2.96, and 3.30.
Now, all right, look, that is not enough to stay on NBC. I understand
that. No.
But that's...
I mean, I don't know that NBC is really doing that much better than that on
the
show of anything.
Yeah, they're spitting out absolutely...
They're flailing.
Yeah, it's bad on a few nights. But for a Friday night show to be pulling you in, what is that average? 3 and some change million? I mean... I've got another whole chart here where they're averaging 4.9 by one assessment. Look, that's enough. If you were on Sci-Fi, if you were like Burn Notice, I don't think had those kind of ratings, and it's the best thing that happened to USA in years.
Right.
That kept the ship sailing. If this had gone to another station, I think it'd been fine. If it'd been on CW to begin with, I think it'd been fine. I'm not sure the CW thinks that they have room for another show that's could be titled Supernatural, but
yeah. And to be clear here, I am looking at the Arrow numbers.
They're lower.
They do worse. They are lower.
Like Flash is doing right about there, and Arrow's doing lower. And to be clear, Legends of Tomorrow hasn't done nearly as well as Constantine. Its numbers are significantly lower.
Oh, Jason.
I'm reaching here. I know. Now, don't get me wrong. Gotham's doing well enough that even on Fox, it's going to be okay for a little while. Like we're going to get to watch that little bat develop for a minute longer. But
yeah, the average viewership in millions of Gotham is for season one was 9.5 million.
Yeah, we're going to be okay.
Now, look, this is by comparison, Gotham is a show about Batman. Batman does better than anything else DC has ever puts out.
It's Batman the bat
is where
the bat
yeah.
draws them in.
Even when Batman isn't even in it, mm-hmm. even when he's just a child, you're still going to pull, you're going to rake in the viewers, man.
Yeah.
I mean, 9.5 million. Constantine had roughly 3 million an episode, and that's really not bad for someone who, as far as the mainstream is concerned, only had Keanu Reeves to tend to it. I mean,
your average moviegoer with no real comic background or man, they think Constantine's like a skinny American bloke with dark hair who would ever consider chewing a stick of gum instead of smoking a cigarette.
Right, right. And
then his little Chaz is Shia LaBeouf. Like, this, no, man, no.
Now, this is what I'm considering, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just for shits and giggles, although it's not a DC Comics property. I'm trying to get inside the head of the executives.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking now at the ratings for Sleepy Hollow. season one of Sleepy Hollow ranged anywhere from looks like 10 million viewers to 6 million viewers on a weekly basis. That was season one. Now, season two, they wound up dropping down to an average of about 4 to 5 million viewers. And we know that that show is actually about to get retooled. But yeah, we're looking at the numbers for season one. That's when they would have greenlit Constantine.
Yeah. Now, and that's again, kind of the problem is they were looking over here at 10 million. And that feels like a comparable show. So they just thought they had a dud, maybe. I don't know, man. I think your comparables should have been, who are the other characters in this universe? Like, what's your fan base look
right.
like? Well, your fan base is us, and we liked the fucking show.
Yeah.
And we're watching to, you know, the extent that we could.
I am, like, NBC dragged it on for a little while, though, and they weren't sure they wanted to get rid of it, and blah, 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 blah.
No, it stayed. It went all the way through. Like, they tried to pitch it every way they could. I'll give them this. It dragged on for so long that I'm confident they actually tried. Someone actually tried to keep this thing going.
Yeah, yeah. It's really,
I know, and it's a lot to talk about the downfall of it, but we should actually discuss the show itself and
yeah.
why we cared at all.
Now, you know, I mean, not that it should be said that this is the reason it was canceled, but the they did kind of get they started out a little strange. They had Liv Aberdeen as the daughter of Jasper Winters,
mm-hmm.
Who was a friend of John Constantine's.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to base the show around her, and then they decided to kind of get rid of her and go more in a more comic-oriented direction with the character of Zed, which I was fine with. I was great with, because Liv Aberdeen was kind of an annoying character, and I love Zed.
You ended up really liking Zed? See, I almost had it the other way around. Like, the Winters girl was... I don't know. I liked her. I certainly wasn't thinking, oh my God, please get rid of her. There's nothing even close to that.
Well, you know, keep in mind, by the time I actually watched the first episode, which I did, I watched that one pretty OG, actually.
Right,
but
right.
I do an entertainment show called The Entertainment Roundtable. It's a radio show. And I already knew that they, before the show ever came out, that they were going to be switching up after the pilot and moving over to Zed.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, I wasn't expecting her to stay around, but at the same time, I was sitting there going, I can totally see why they're first of all, I could see why they casted her and why they wanted this character in the first place. And then, I mean, she's basically Cordelia from Angel. But so is Zed. So is Zed. Zed is actually even more Cordelia than...
I don't remember Cordelia having psychic visions, but...
Are you serious?
No, it's been a while,
like,
man.
When
it's been a long while since I've watched any kind of Angel.
Yeah. And in Angel, there was a demon character named... gosh, what was his name? Doyle.
Yeah,
and
there was a Doyle.
He was in the first six episodes, and he had visions. He would have visions and send Angel and his crew over to...
Yeah, she got him.
...to do the thing. And then he passed it on to Cordelia, I believe, through a kiss.
Something like that.
So Zed is basically...
Probably
Cordy.
Joss Whedon's little nod to the Superman movies right there.
Yeah. Of course, you know, Constantine and Zed have been around for far longer than Angel, so I'm sure that, you know, I'm not going to say they ripped off Qordi. I would guess that Joss Whedon has read a fair amount of Constantine in his time, or Hellblazer, I should say.
Right.
And probably kind of just grabbed that. He was also probably trying to figure out, like, what the hell can I do with Cordelia? Because this character is terrible.
Right. Because she's clearly worth having, but yeah, no. I don't understand. Now, look, they changed characters, though, and I didn't mind. I did think it was kind of weird because you can tell they're building up to this being a character that you're supposed to really get to know, and then she's just gone.
Mm-hmm.
She's just gone. That's it. And I mean, what is it like?
Yeah.
End of the first episode, they get rid of her. So somewhere, they got really started on the pilot, they were already thinking she wasn't going to really make it. And yeah, I do remember seeing that Zed had been cast and thinking, okay, what? Well, I don't know. I thought you had a girl. Anyway, but yeah, it starts off a little weird, but I don't think it's so weird that it should have really destroyed anything.
Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, I wouldn't mind Liv Aberdeen coming back at some point and wrapping up her story or something. She wasn't so egregious, you know, that I just never wanted to see her again. I wouldn't mind her being like a, you know, recurring character once or twice a season.
Right.
But maybe have a little, you know, wrap up. But she wasn't interesting. Like, Zed actually was a lot more interesting to me from the get-go.
Well, yeah, Zed has a lot going on. They introduced her well. When you meet Zed, she's just scribbling John's face over everything, and
mm-hmm.
She does. She's fun, and she's kind of naive in this optimistic way. Got that childlike, I don't know, passion.
Yeah.
So you kind of meet her and just immediately kind of roll with her because she just seems so damn nice. And God, you almost feel bad for her the second she gets in a room with John Constantine, though, because how is that possibly going to end well? It's a theme for the entire show, really. And it's a theme that's there for a reason. As Constantine generally does push the people away, anyone that he really cares about, he pushes away. Because as the show points out over and over again, you stay with me for too long, you end up dead.
Now this show, man, there was some potential. There really was. Jeremy Davies, he's a guy that's been on Lost. He's been on a bunch of other stuff. I know him primarily from Lost. He played the character Richie Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I love that guy.
Oh, man, he was a lot of fun, too. The character in this show, though, is, he's just kind of a fellow amateur mage. They're part of it's the Newcastle crew. The part of Constantine in the books that they stayed absolutely true to is you meet Constantine in the institution.
Right.
Just after accidentally, well, I mean, he fucked up. He bungled here and got a little girl's soul sent to hell.
Right.
That's a sentence that's hard to even
She was,
it's just, it's hard not to feel
she
bad
was
about
possessed.
That.
Yeah, she was possessed, and he was going to try to exorcise her, and somehow wound up
right. And all of the relevant people from Newcastle get onto him for the ego you must have to think you could have controlled one demon so well that you could just use him to your will and not expect something bad to happen. But he does. And this is one of those themes through the show: is magic has its costs, and if he learned anything there, he learned that there is absolutely no getting away with something for free with magic.
And I really love that. I really love that they stuck with that magic has its costs. Like, he does a spell, they said, you know, what did that cost you? And he says, a couple of years.
Yeah, there's a lovely scene, you know, where he's trying to figure out, it's an old bloke of his from his band days. They even used mucous membrane. Old friend of his from back when he was actually just trying to, you know, screw around and have a band. He wasn't trying to do anything in his life. His early life is John Constantine. He's a screw up. So that's his mode. But
right.
He meets that guy, and yeah, he has to revive him for a few seconds. And, you know, to revive the dead like that, apparently, yeah, it costs you a couple days worth of your mortal life. Yeah, man. They keep that theme the entire freaking time. Whole portions of, a lot of the episodes even end on the note of what did you have to sacrifice, including Zed's entire storyline for the first, what would have been the first half of the season, where her with the brain tumor.
Right.
And they had that brain tumor, it ends in a, it's hard to say. It's one of those things where if you wanted an outright answer to the brain tumor and whether that was the cause of the visions or whether they were God-given, if you wanted an outright answer, you're just going to have to get over it. What they just make you accept that the angel sort of doublespeak is you're going to have to trust him.
Now, We haven't gotten any news as to whether Angelica Saleya, is that her name? Angelica Saleya, or
I don't know. I thought we've established that we're Charles, terrible at names.
Charles Halford and Angelica Saleya have not. We'll call it. Yeah, they have not been confirmed. Chaz and Zed haven't been confirmed for the Arrow crossover. I hope so hard that they're both there.
I doubt very highly they will be. I think they would have said by now if they were going to be.
I don't know. I don't know if that's
and
true.
Some of the news, before all this came out involved the last thing that happened was when he finally said, "Guys, it's never going to happen. I shopped it around to everyone I could, and there's just no home for it." He also included in that little briefing that we've released all the actors from their contracts.
Well, yeah.
I'm not saying that can't happen. Mean they can't. I'm just saying if I had to put a paycheck on it one way or the other, I'm saying no.
Well, overall, the thing I want to see what happens with Zed. I just want more of Chaz because he was awesome.
He was great.
And I love Chaz.
This is a phrase you're just going to have to get used to in life. True Butt alum.
Yeah. Now, Scanlan as Jim Corrigan. Oh, man. I really want to see the Spectre. And
I want to see that cat play the Spectre, too.
I know.
I thought he had this wonderful, nuanced little undertone. It was one of those, like, still waters run deep kind of things. You never saw him react too much to anything, but you always had the feeling that if he did overreact to any situation, everyone in the room might die.
Right. If you pop over to our Batman Begins review, you'll see that I'm complaining about how bad Cillian Murphy played Scarecrow.
Mm-hmm.
This dude has a very similar vibe to him. Like, if you're not paying attention, you're going to look at Emmett Scanlan and go, "Wow, he is really playing Jim Corrigan as a, like, he's just, this is awful." But then when you really start paying attention to him, like, no, man, this is nuanced.
This is nuanced,
he is a creepy bastard.
It looks like not a lot's happening, but that was where we ended up disagreeing on. I mean, I think you ended up half agreeing with me that, like, when he's just Jonathan Crane, it was a fine performance, and as it progresses to Scarecrow, it goes off the fucking rails.
Right.
Apparently the director told him, "I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save your performance," as it careened.
Yeah, it does sound like Nolan.
Yeah.
Anyway, Emmett Scanlan, man. Emmett J. Scanlan. I really want to see so much more of him. And we don't have to have Constantine for that. Like, I say we bring on Jim Corrigan for whatever the hell we can figure out. Like, shit, man. Have him transfer over to Starling City. Like, now is his mission to figure out the supernatural as well. And he's noticed some weird shit going on.
And you want him as Corrigan, obviously.
Oh, God, yes. God, yes. Jim Corrigan. Let's do this.
Don't want him in the you don't want him in the hood yet?
Well, no. I just want to do Jim Corrigan and then, you know.
Because you realize if he shows up on Arrow, he's going to have some line about, "I'll show you a fucking green hood."
Yeah, eventually. Let's do that.
Think you're in charge of revenge, huh, Oliver? Well,
I am begging Berlanti and group, whoever.
Berlanti and co.
That's the way you get Zed there. That's the way you get Jim. Because they had like a little romance thing going on. Let's say that she's moved on from Constantine. Some shit went down. They mention it, but they don't really actually say what happened. We know it has to do with Manny and the darkness rising and all that. And then we just have like her kind of there with Jim Corrigan, even though she knows that he's going to die. And let's just do that. Let's like have Constantine pop over every once in a while. I want those characters back.
I know. I mean, what you just proposed was roughly to recast the entire thing, but do it in Starling City.
Yeah, I mean, just bring him as recurring. We don't need him every episode.
No,
or maybe we do. You know, God, Arrow needs some help.
Yeah, I know. But, although, God, they... I know it's just because it gets to be a news and a drought and everything, but, man, they're looking good right now. I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to what my actual real hope is, not the outlandish nonsense that you just outlined.
That's not outlandish nonsense. That's a true hope. I wouldn't even categorize that as fan wink.
And I don't even think it's fan wink. I think it's just a thing you really hope for, but I think it's over the moon.
Oh, it's not going to happen.
Over the damn moon. Now, what I really do wish would happen, and I'll at least say there's a chance for this, is, okay, we do the one shot, but just have Matt Ryan. Fine. Great. Let me have my Constantine. It'll be great. I'll be happy. The episode does really well. You get a lot of positive response for it.
Mm-hmm.
you got a lot going on. Don't shoehorn Constantine in here. I mean, I don't want to try to wrap up that entire series now. You're trying to start Legends of Tomorrow. You got a whole thing. But maybe
right.
Be in the spring or next fall. Maybe bring in one or two of the extra characters with him and come in and actually wrap up that story. Like, preferably, it's supposed to be episode 405 right now.
Yeah. Right.
Now, by the way, that does mean, though, that we have four episodes without Sarah Lance, so.
Maybe, but.
Yeah, right. Only maybe, because God knows that could be a lot of flashbacks and flash forwards and whatnot. But
yeah, speaking of shoehorning, they shoehorn Sarah in as much as they can, and I don't understand.
I don't know. Whatever. We're gonna live with
yeah.
it. Yeah, we're gonna have to live with it. It wouldn't be. I don't think it'd be asking too much too if this episode has a good enough response to bring it back next year. Up the story, and plus that would be about right for the timing. I mean, right now you pop on.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't mind at all some little, just a throwaway line. Just mention that Constantine has problems that he's working on right now and that he's over here
right.
doing something. I mean,
right.
I don't know that, and you know, they have the scrying map that they use on this. I should have done this before we started, actually, but I really should have freeze framed it and checked to see if Starling City is on there at all. Because it's a realistic map.
Yeah.
And I don't know where you'd fit
that. They don't have it anymore, though.
Maybe like an extra red spot somewhere.
They don't have the scrying map anymore, though.
Well, no, but, you know, you can go back to the old episodes. But, yeah, now he was, you know, towards the end of the season, series, I guess. He was told that was a crutch, you know, to trust your instincts. I get that. But it would have been nice to have a reason to get to Star City. I assume the Rising Darkness is why he'd get there, because that's why he's supposed to be doing everything right now. But, yeah, get him over there. Give me a little, toss me a bone here about how he is working on something big. And then next year, just come wrap it up for me.
Yeah, I do. I want it wrapped up, but man, there's no version of me that is not mourning the loss of this series. I know, like early in the podcast, I hadn't watched it yet, and I didn't want to unless we were going to get Constantine on Arrow or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the rumors started really hitting heavy, and they said they were going to try to make it happen, I was just like, okay, dive in, man. I'm not saying it's like Firefly level. But these are for the most part 13 damn good episodes.
Yeah,
no pun intended on the damn good. But
they just genuinely are. They're don't get me wrong. There's a couple of places where it gets a little silly. Hey, that's how TV works, man. Nothing is that good. Not even The Wire. I said that, and I'll stand by it. Not even The Wire is that good.
I've never seen an episode of The Wire.
I've seen enough to know that it's not as good as everyone damn thinks it is. But it's just because anytime someone talks about it, they speak of it like it is infallible.
I've had that too, and I don't understand.
In any case, I mean, look, man, it's a really it's one of those shows where it's procedural to some extent.
Right.
Every week he's got a new thing, and they even had, you know, the scrying map was a cute little, this is what we're doing this week.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, man. If the procedural format was just going to be a real deal breaker for you, then
right.
I guess I can't help you. But if you can get along with the fact that people do need framing devices and plot devices, and, you know, that's how stories work, then welcome back. What they did was a really good episode, or a really good job with each time they used it. The character that's involved, like every time they showed me, like the, you know, for instance, the episode where the little kid's possessed and he terrorizes his family.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. There's an entire episode where the villain is just one piece of vinyl. It's a vinyl record, and I watched the shit out of that episode.
Yeah.
Oh, I totally would. I would have totally died, by the way, if I was in the show. If I got near that vinyl, it would have been too much for me. I would have had to have heard that song.
Mm-hmm.
I would have died. I have no doubt of it. But God, just like pound for pound, every episode they gave you a good antagonist. Every time he whips something out, it's always some like fun little magical adventure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the same one with the little kid that's terrorizing his family. He runs into the room, and the little kid, the little demon child at this point, flips out on him. And Constantine, if he has nothing, Constantine's got a quick wit. He immediately runs to a mirror, puts a spell on it, pulls the mirror up, and protects himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's a resourceful little fuck.
Yeah. Now, speaking of Firefly, quickly, and spoilers for Firefly, if you haven't seen that, just go watch it. What's wrong with you? Why haven't you watched Firefly? Mm-hmm. How much, and this is one of my favorite bits of Constantine, how much did Gary Lester remind you of Private Tracy Smith from The Message? Like his whole arc and everything.
You know, not one bit until you mentioned it, but yeah, there are some tropes.
Oh man. Like I had almost the same reaction too. Like, oh man, Gary Lester, old friend of Constantine's,
one of the newfound the Newcastle crew.
One of the Newcastle crew, he went and hid when the shit was going down.
And he
apparently a very heroin addict, all sorts of.
Yeah, he's one of the
stuff.
You know, there's a whole, you know, in the addiction realm, there are many kinds of addiction. It's rarely as straightforward as I'm an addict of this. There's comorbidity abounding. So in his case, he's one of the people that when he has it under control, you know, it's just pot and booze. Well, the way Dennis Leary used to describe it was taking a night off, taking it easy, just meant a few joints and like half a case of beer. Mm-hmm. That was a relaxing evening. So this guy's one of those, though. When he's stressed out, say, for instance, if you just got a little girl damned, you end up on a bender in whatever the hell country has easy access to heroin. So for him, I forget where that was. I think it was India, I want to say.
Sudan.
No, Sudan. I'm sorry. Yeah, but he ends up there, legitimately does find this demon, and even in his narcotic haze, managed to do some pretty good sorcery tricks. Not even just a regular demon. They describe that this isn't a quizzling. This is the demon of famine, I think it was.
Yeah.
This is one of the people that's mentioned by name in the Bible. he managed to pull that off. Like Constantine couldn't even do it when he tried. So he ends up having kind of a, you end up being proud of him because he actually did do that. And God, you are. It's just, I know what you're getting at as far as the way he goes out. It's one of those lives. It's one of those lives that's lived frivolously, and the bookmark, the end cap on it is just full of honor, and it's really nice.
Yeah, man, that killed me, man. Because Constantine winds up having to like put the demon in him.
Yeah, yeah.
And he agrees to it. That's the way he is going to eat him alive, and it's going to kill the demon, but it also kill him.
Of course.
And man, and then later on, I don't remember which episode. Maybe it was Blessed or the Damned is what I want to say, but I'm not sure. You just because the Chaz, not Chaz, Jasper has this mirror in his house that
I think it was that episode.
It's time distorted. It's all time distorted. So you can see the past in the mirror. And Constantine's just there drinking himself into a stupor and looking at his now dead friend Gary Lester, like shaking from withdrawals.
Right.
Jeez, man.
And the thing is, though, to do what you have to do, it. God, the ending of that of the episode with Lester is particularly touching because it's one of those moments in the show as it's progressing where you kind of realize that they really are on the same page. Because at the very end of this, he does. He agrees. His friend agrees to sacrifice himself to properly trap this demon so that they can properly let the demon starve inside his own body, which will send it back to hell. And the process of doing that is a slow, agonizing, absolutely terrible death. And, you know, without a blink, with a smirk even, really, the guy signs up for it and goes. And, yeah, it is. It's a really good moment. It's got a lot of camaraderie, a lot of nobility to it. It's really fun to watch. And the last scene in that episode is... Is Gary? Him just writhing in absolute agony on a bed, and Constantine with this hell blazing is honestly the word that should be applied, so forgive me, hell blazing look in his eyes, just staring straight forward with this firm grasp on his friend's hand, who's just writhing. Honestly, if I just showed you that scene, that's all I'd have to show you to know the scene that the story has heart, that they actually try to do something with the show. It's a damn good scene. He's just sitting there gripping his friend while he dies and just being at his bedside. It's not like the friend would even know. It's just his duty. And he knows that, and he sits there and he does it, and he feels everything he's supposed to feel, even though he doesn't have to. And then just to top it off, Manny, this angel friend that he's a, you know, frimesis of, pops in, doesn't say a word, doesn't do anything, just pops in and sits with him. Constantine barely even glances at him. It's just a really... ah, it's the kind of scene you have to earn, and they fucking did it. Because by the end of that episode, you were completely emotionally invested in the show.
I think that's my favorite episode of the show.
I don't know. I don't know. That would be a good question, actually.
I really love
the one with Richie Simpson. And the Jacob Shaw and all that stuff. That might be my favorite. That or the Felix Faust one. By the way, guys.
Yeah,
Felix
I was about to say
Faust.
Quid pro quo. And played wonderfully by Mark Margolis.
Oh, yeah. Who is just always there for you when you need a creepy bastard.
Yeah, he has a great turn in
for a landlord that hates animals.
God, you're going back to Ace Ventura?
Hey, look. 90s kids, you know what the fuck I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Ventura. Yes, Satan? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were someone else. It's a good scene.
Damn it.
This dude has
by the way, if you are a 90s kid, never watch that movie again. You'll remember it much better than you actually will enjoy it.
Jason is half right. Anyway. I watched it a couple of years ago.
If you want to know which half, go watch it yourself.
I watched Ace Ventura and Ace Ventura When Nature Calls probably 2 years ago. I got on a weird bent and kind of wanted to go back and watch a bunch of old stuff that I dug when I was a kid.
Right.
And about half of the jokes are just as good as you remember them. The other half are just as good, but only for nostalgia reasons. Like, just sitting there, they're going, I thought that was so funny.
Right.
But yeah,
I did go back and watch
recently.
The Mask just to try, and yeah, I had about the same reaction, I admit.
The Mask is still pretty on point.
Okay, all right, sorry. We're getting distracted.
We are. But Mark Margolis, like I said, he's always a great character actor and one of my favorite bits. And if you want to see a dude act, go check him out in Breaking Bad.
This is
an old school, I know. But he's an old school mob boss. And I won't go into spoilers here, but he's an old school mob boss. Like, he's really old. Like, his family runs the shit now. But at this point, like, he's just an old man. And he's stroked out and had so many problems that what he does now is he just sits in a wheelchair, and rings a bell. Like, he's just got a little bell under his finger. And he tries to, that's how he communicates.
Mm-hmm.
But he has all of these, he's like doing like a stroke thing, like with like half of his face is kind of paralyzed. But so he's pulling that off wonderfully. He's doing the bell. He's got the like things that are happening. He's trying to alert his like family to shit that like Walter White and people are doing, whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But this dude pulls it off so well. This is an actor's actor, man.
Okay, let me wrap up your endorsement with this. If you can actually say to someone, yeah, I know he only sat in a chair and rang a bell, but he rang the fuck out of that bell.
Yeah, I mean, this is what Tom Hardy was really hoping he could do with having his entire face covered as Bane in Dark Knight Rises.
Thought he'd be able to pull it off. Yeah, you know. No, I mean, if you can watch somebody in a chair like that and think, God, that's an amazing performance. Yeah, man, that really is.
It really is. But, you know, Felix Faust, man, and you get someone like Mark Margolis and that's the perfect choice to play Felix Faust. Just, I never thought I'd see Felix Faust on screen. None.
Really?
Unless
didn't.
It was like an episode of Justice League. I didn't think, like a cartoon, I didn't think Felix Faust would show up, but I was happy as hell.
Yeah, I really was too. There was potential for more, like, The stuff that was either in the pilot or when you look around Jasper's house, the artifacts that are available, just to name three, there's a very particular helmet. So somewhere in this show, Dr. Fate's hanging around. Well, I guess it's just the helmet, so we're between fates. But somewhere that helmet is going to find somebody, and I mean that's how it rolls. There's a Medusa mask on the wall in the background.
Yeah.
The half and half, the whole thing. Roger Hayden, presumably, is somewhere, I guess, under control. And then the one that really cracked me up when you look close, there's backwards writing somewhere. I forget where it is, but yeah, Zatanna's apparently around there somewhere. Like, all of the fun, magical people could have been involved. That doesn't include, like, Pandora's boxes hanging around there. There's an Ebbestick around there somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, all of this was available on the shelves.
Yeah.
There was just this litany, dude. Endless litany, because it was a TARDIS home that it was much bigger on the inside. But
yeah,
there was so much we could have done. And that's just what could have been on the horizon. That could have been, you know, seasons 2 and 3. Even during this season, you still had Richie Simpson to play with. You had Jim Corrigan. I mean, you had Papa Midnight.
Oh, Papa Midnight was cool.
He was fun, man. He takes you a second to get used to it. He's almost an acquired taste. Like, he really is like a bourbon you have to get past the burn for, and then it tastes really good.
I dug him as the ongoing villain, though. He didn't really hit me as hard
until,
villain.
He was another Fremesis. Like, that's best, you know, Constantine has in his life is people who hate him but need him anyway.
I really dug him. Like, I was kind of lukewarm on him until they did the episode where he is actually just bringing back people from the dead. And you actually get to see, like, I don't know, like, his little following, like, the people who come to him make requests of him, and, like, they, like, kind of worship him almost. Like,
no, they literally do. I mean, he's a voodoo priest, and voodoo technically is a religion. Technically worshipers. Yeah. I mean, they're not worshiping him. It's a clergy situation, but...
Right. The voodoo shit always freaks me out, though, a little bit. Like, I feel a little uncomfortable when they start delving into that.
I think that's what's supposed to be a natural human reaction to someone performing voodoo.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
I think so. And on top of that, like, they had, and I don't think, I couldn't find it anywhere. If I'm wrong, please correct me. I couldn't find it anywhere, and, you know, speaking for Dave, too, we don't know Constantine like we know, say, Batman.
Right.
There's only so much time in the day, and God help me, we've tried, but, and don't get me wrong, we've done our research before this show ever came up. We're fans, but that doesn't mean that I can tell you, for instance, if Chaz has ever been a regenerative being before. I couldn't find it anywhere. If I'm wrong, I'd love to know, because I want to go back and read all that. But as far as I know, that's an invention of the show. Now, they kept the yellow cap, but that was a really fucking cool mechanism to employ. I wish they'd made the number higher than, like, 35, but...
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. Like, I like that they made the number so low, because even if the character wasn't that way in the comics, it's a temporary thing. So he could actually just get down to one life and just be, like, the normal bloke he always was.
Yeah. No, like, I mean, the inverse for me is I really enjoyed My Name is Earl. Jason Lee's dear to my heart. If you grew up a Kevin Smith fan, it's hard not to watch. But he had that list of things he was trying to complete, and you never knew what the last number was on the list, so you never knew how close he was getting to completing it. Always bothered me. Here.
That's because they never knew they were going to be renewed or not.
Right, seriously. by the way, just to be sure, if anyone used to watch My Name is Earl and was annoyed that it was cut off, go find the AMA by the guy who did it, Garcia, and he actually does tell you what the ending of that show was, so... I was happy to know it was out there. If anyone did, go for it. But with Chaz, man, they gave him like a real number, which to some extent I wished it was higher, because let's project ahead. Say this show did last like 3 seasons.
Right.
That's about as far as he would have made it. Because, man, he died like, 10 times probably in this season? Or in this half a season?
Yeah, he did. He died a lot.
And I wondered about certain things about the mechanics. Like, every now and then they have one episode where they just have him injure himself so they can create a distraction. Well, that's fine. Does that take like half a life, quarter life?
Yeah.
Fifth of life?
I don't know. That's good. I did wonder about that.
I just wondered about the mechanics a little bit. I'm sure they would have worked out.
Harold Perrineau, I think that's how you say his name. Again, don't know.
Hold on.
Don't know names.
Let me take my guess too, so we can both be wrong. Harold Perrineau. Yeah. I'm going to go with Perrineau.
All right. Yeah. This is a guy
going down with you, buddy.
On Lost. Yeah, he played Michael on Lost. He's also a Lost alum and did a fine job on that show. And he does a fine job here in a completely different type of role. I really hope to see this guy in other stuff. This is a good cat here.
Yeah. No. He and in particular the episode where he's human for a minute.
Yeah, and that's what I was about to bring up. Angels and Ministers of Grace. They go to the hospital. This is the episode where. Zed discovers she has a brain tumor, and
this actually might be my favorite episode.
But Constantine has, and this is one of those fun things. Like this episode reminded me a lot of the episode. I think it was called Q-less in Star Trek: The Next Generation, where the Q Continuum decides to punish Q and lets him be. He's got to be mortal now, and he gets to choose whichever race he wants to, and he accidentally thinks human. And winds up on the Enterprise, and he's mortal, and he doesn't understand hunger, and he doesn't understand all this stuff. This is, like, Manny, Harold's character is an angel who kind of pops around every once in a while to guide Constantine. And as we find out in the last bit, he's actually betraying Constantine, and he's kind of an evil angel, or so we're led to believe. Anyway.
That's the fun part, is it's only mid-season, and you have to have a big, like, drop-the-hammer reveal. I honestly could not tell you what was on their minds. He could have been an angel with an angelic plan. He could have been an angel with a demonic plan. I don't know. I really don't.
Well, this was the end of their season. They knew it was going to be the last episode. I mean,
they didn't know it was going to be the last episode of the series.
They didn't know it was going to be like forever, but they knew it was going to be the last
season. Oh, no, that is a good
point.
They knew it was the last of season one. But I still, when they were planning that, they still probably had that turn in mind. That was their big cliffhanger for either the end of the preseason or season one and hoping to get a mid-season run.
Right.
That was where they were going to drop you off and pick you up later after school.
But angels and ministers of grace, man, he becomes human. John puts a spell on him, and he looks like a doctor. Mm-hmm. That because he does this thing where he pops into someone else's body and kind of walks around and talks to John for a minute. John sees him as he is, but no one else does. And then he'll fly out of that body, and John traps him inside of this dude, this doctor, who's apparently having an affair with one of the nurses.
Of course he is.
And Manny, being an angel, has never experienced sins of the flesh. And just the bit where she, like, grabs him and brings him, this nurse grabs him and brings him into, like, the janitor's closet and starts making out with him. And he's like, oh. And then she, you know, gets down on her knees, and you just see him from, like, the waist up. And he goes, oh.
Yeah, yeah. No, he does. He has this absolutely, great. Oh, man, it is. It's kind of fun and naive and, God help me, you actually do believe this is the first time someone has touched that man's penis.
Or that he's ever had a penis to touch.
Yeah, and yeah. Yeah, we're not sure about the anatomy of angels was not addressed in Constantine, at least in the show's format.
Right. If they don't address it, I just assume that it's the Kevin Smith dogma canon. I just
assume they're all Ken dolls. I really...
Right.
Yeah. That's my natural conception for some reason. You know, and one of the moments I loved out of that episode, and Manny and Zed have a lot of fun conversations. They're mostly just... And this is the sad part. Like, Constantine is emotionally fucking bankrupt is what he is. Like, he has nothing to give. He you can tell that he is a person who's capable of feeling things and expressing things in a normal human manner. But you just really, he's just done with it. And this is one of those situations where Manny has to step in for him and explain to the people that he cares about that they are important to him.
Right.
I thought he their conversation at the bedside was fantastic. Just absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then later, God, this is... And I went back and forth with Zed. Sometimes she annoyed me a little bit because she was a little too, I don't know, airy.
She's an artist. I was able to get behind that.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that. but she has the look on her face when she sees Manny, when she actually sees an angel, and it's funny, like, that the episode ends with, you know, John basically saying, like, you two enjoy each other and sodding off to have a cigarette, fine. But if I don't even imagine that they had a conversation between those pews. I just imagine that she just sat there and looked at him and smiled and was just happy to see the visage of an actual proof of God, and just was content beyond contention with that. And he was just happy to be there for her. That's how the scene ends for me. It ends with like 2 hours of that and him going, all right, well, this has been fun. And, you know, splitting. Well, it actually probably really ends with Constantine finishing his cigarette, coming in there and saying, should I get you to a room, and then breaking up. But
yeah,
because damn you, Constantine, you can't just let something be beautiful. but it is. It's a really engaging scene just to watch her through this episode, like, question everything. She questions her purpose, her faith, everything. This is it's the most existential episode she has. And it's very rare that someone has an existential crisis like that and it gets to be rewarding. And in this case, it is. So it's really fun to watch for her.
Yeah. Oh, man. Speaking of the characters going through crises, Quid Pro Quo was a great episode. I love seeing Chaz's backstory.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I just...
got a good heart, that one.
He was just good.
Just a good dude?
Just solidly good in every way. I just dug him a lot. And there's not, you don't get all, like, so much of Chaz that, like, you know, you can, I mean, they wait until damn near the end of the season to really jump into Chaz's backstory.
Yeah.
This is the Felix Faust episode, by the way. So,
right.
Great stuff. And, oh man, I wish there was more. I wish we had more to look forward to.
I understand.
Where do we go? Where do we go, man?
Well, you only get to go as far as Arrow, but.
I know. It's just...
Oh, and did I mention this? I don't think we brought this up, and I've never been good at citing my papers. That's only been something I could do when forced. But I think it's John Badham, the guy who directed Danse Vaudou. That would have been episode 5. I think he's the one directing Arrow for the episode that Constantine's going to be there.
Is he?
It's a guy that has. I can tell you that I think it's John Badham. And if I'm wrong about that, I'm still going to be right about this. It is someone who has directed an episode of Constantine that is going to pop over and do a guest direction on the Arrow.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
that's,
you know,
that's pretty good.
Yeah. We're going to get someone who knows like how to shoot him. It's going to be somebody Matt Ryan's met before. And they literally, when he said he was dusting the jacket off, however he phrased it. He literally meant it. They took the costume out of storage and shipped it to Vancouver. They didn't just recreate it somewhere. It literally went out of the lot and got shipped to Canada.
That's great.
It's happening, Dave. It's happening.
Now, some of the fans have, or some of the Hellblazer fans have complained that the show didn't, well, the show was met with some criticism from the LGBT community because they didn't portray him as bisexual necessarily. Now, the showrunner said, you know, in the comic books, Constantine, you know, he aged in real time. Within the tomes of 3 decades of comics, there might have been 1 or 2 issues where he's getting out of bed with a man. So, you know, maybe 20 years from now, but there are no immediate plans. And, you know, there was a lot of backlash from other fans that he wasn't chain smoking quite as much as he should have been. And I've also read qualms that...
Okay, I want to give him absolute credit with this. With the chain smoking, at least, NBC told him they couldn't.
And then he wound up doing it anyway.
Well,
later,
no, he ended up finding a way to shoot it as though he was chain smoking. But NBC said that you could show him lighting it, but not inhaling.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why every fucking time you see him do something, he pulls it out, he lights the thing, and it cuts away, and then it comes back, and he's all, you know, aghast in the fumes of a cigarette. Now, it ended up being one of those things where NBC, that's just kind of silly.
It is.
You know, watching a character on TV, I'm not sure that's what does it. I'm not going to get into the pathology of smoking, but it was a little silly to say he could have one. But it was one of those things where I don't care which side of the issue you're on as far as the persistence of this disease. That was a middle ground that doesn't serve anyone.
Yeah,
it's still a cool that's guy weird. Smoking. That might as well be Camel Joe with magic.
I liked the counter. I liked the balance they had on the show. I mean, I don't need to watch him smoke a cigarette for 5 minutes to be like, "Yep, that's my Constantine."
Right.
I liked the balance they had on the show. That at the same time, you know, it never influenced me what you know characters were doing. You know what I mean? Like. I don't know how to explain it. It's just, I mean, I'm sure there are people out there who are easily influenced by characters on television, but it's very similar to an argument I made earlier in the Gods and Monsters review that we did, where I was like, I've never been attracted to cartoons, man.
Right. Right. I don't know what to tell you.
Real people, but you know. Now, the really important thing that I've read a lot of, and like Jason said earlier in this episode here, we're not as familiar with John Constantine or Hellblazer as we are, say, Batman. Batman's our boy. He's our dog.
Yeah, I mean,
John Constantine's a fun aside from time to time for us. So.
I know Batman better than I know my own history.
Right, right.
Now,
and
sure, alcohol, whatever. But the fact is.
There seem to be some, and I think it might actually, from what I've seen of the comics and what I've read, I think this does hold some weight, and it was something that bothered me in the show. Even though I love the show, this did bother me. by virtue of it being a television series in of itself and being procedural, they were pushing Constantine from a writer's standpoint. They were pushing Constantine into a more protagonist role than he really deserves, because in the comics he's way more apathetic than he ever is in the show. Like, in the comics he's like, he's almost he's almost against actually doing anything. Like, oh, bloody hell.
Yeah.
Can't I just sit here and watch the end of Mankind and smoke my cigarettes and drink my booze? And, you know, to place him into they gave him a reason with the Rising Darkness and everything. And like, okay,
no, and
I can get behind
they
that.
They even just made it personal to him.
They did. They made it personal to
end
him.
End of the
and,
first
I mean,
episode, he says, like, when they're getting rid of Jasper's kid, was it Liv Aberdeen? When they're getting rid of Liv Aberdeen, they specifically say, you know, he's at a bar, he's getting drunk, and he's trying to forget about his woes, as Constantine does. And Manny appears, and one of the things he says is, you know, defending himself because he ran her off and, you know, he orchestrated it, and fine. But defending himself, he specifically says, you know, if she's going to get into our battle, she needs to know what she's up to. And all Manny focuses on is, you said we. Because that's the whole point. For even Manny, a fucking angel, it's going to be hard to get John Constantine to care about something.
Right, right. So, yeah, in that way, I was okay with it. And I could understand where, because they did their due diligence in kind of building up and having, you know, even though it was somewhat off screen and they did quick flashbacks to it. I mean, this is a dude that's trying to get redemption for sending a little girl to hell.
Right.
I mean, no matter how apathetic you might be for that, I mean, you sent a little girl to hell, man.
Yeah. it's a hard thing to say and defend, right?
Right, so
it's got
maybe
this
you get off your ass and
kind
try.
Of quality to it, right there, just on the top.
Right, right. So maybe you get off your ass and try a little bit.
Right, right.
So I'm good with it. In as far as you know, as that's concerned, I could have used a little more apathy, but a little more Spikeism.
No. I look. There have to be adaptations. They're due there for any medium change. There have to be. And in one of these, I would have been annoyed if I'm sitting there watching, you know, episode 8, 9, 10, 11, and he's just as unwilling to get on board as he was in the first episode. You want progression, so
right.
Let it happen, and that's something you don't have to deal with in the comic books too much. Like
now,
with
the other
comics,
thing, though,
we're talking about monthlies over years. Things change glacially sometimes in comic books. With the TV show, I've got, you know, you got to keep me happy every week, motherfucker. So
right, and you know, hey, you know, like I think they did. Like I argue this all the time. Like when they adapt these characters, I feel it's really important for them to get the essence of the character.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they did, and I thought Matt Ryan did a really good job with that. And they got the essence of John Constantine. Now, I mean, maybe not later on in the comics, like, because he does. He ages 30 years. He really does.
He really does. And
he's one of the only characters who ages.
He is, though. And to the point of the LGBT thing, like, he is. He's one of those characters that ages, and he can have a lot of nuances in his life. And, you know, Constantine getting out of bed with a guy at some point, fine, whatever. It's a TV show, though, and we're not trying to use your sexuality as a gimmick of any kind.
Right.
If it's relevant to the plot, abso-fucking-lutely, and don't shy away from it. If it's not, you're using it as a gimmick.
Right.
Now,
right.
That being said, the show got canceled because it didn't have enough viewers. Maybe we should have done that, but...
Right.
As it is, let it stand on its merits as a story, not as a statement.
Right, and it does. I feel like it does completely stand on its merits as a story. It's an unfinished story, unfortunately. But so far, yeah, it does stand on its own as a story, and a good story. I'm actually invested in what happens to Constantine. I've been really excited about Constantine crossing over with Arrow and what could actually possibly come out of that. One thing that they really did. They pointed out, like I've seen people point out, that he wasn't quite the silver-tongued devil. Like in the comics, he can pretty much get himself, like, he knows a lot of magic and stuff, but his biggest strength is like is talking his way out of a conversation. And they gave references to it, like I think it was Papa Midnight being like, you won't be able to talk your way out of this one,
right?
You know, but you know, we didn't get to see that a whole
the
lot.
Strongest reference to that I can recall is I think it was, I'm having trouble remembering if it was Lester or Richie Simpson. I think it was Gary, though. That, shit, I now that I'm thinking about it, it's getting all muddled. But look, one of them actually said at some point that, you know, back in the day, that was all they wanted, was you just wanted to be in his crew.
Yeah. And he could talk you into anything.
Yeah, and they paint him, when he had the Newcastle crew, they paint him as that guy that was just so, his balls could barely get in the door behind him. And you just, these people wanted to just be in the same experience that he was having. Because that was an honor by itself. We're talking about a guy who started a band called Mucous Membrane. Like, he obviously has the wherewithal to pull off whatever the hell he wants to pull off at any given time. Like, he's got the charisma level. And watching the guy, you kind of, you get the sense that, yeah, he absolutely does have that charisma level. Because I'm tuning in every week because this guy's fun to fucking watch. But they even, the reason I'll get him off, I'll give him a pass on that is because they specifically, all of this, the entire show as it ended up being, you know, finalized and presented is in the wake of the Newcastle incident. So,
I was going to say the same thing. Yeah, his character has been diminished. And because of that, the show as we have it shows a broken Constantine trying to right certain wrongs and, by God, trying to, like, they deconstructed the character. So you see a lot more of the character as he is when he's alone than you would, I would say, on a normal basis. As far as just being the swaggering cock of the walk that he is.
Right. And he is. He's one of those people that just had that congenital ability to convince other people that whatever the hell it was he was doing was the most important thing they've ever seen.
And listen, man, I mean, you might be a super confident, outgoing person, but I mean, and then, you know, think about it. If you, let's say you're just so super outgoing and confident, and then you screw up and you say something really stupid in front of a whole bunch of people. For a couple of weeks, you don't feel so confident and outgoing. By that measure, Constantine just sent a little girl to hell.
Right.
Because he was too confident.
And he does. He denies everything. He tries. I mean, when you open the show, he's getting electroshock therapy in one of the opening scenes of the show.
I loved that, by the way.
I thought it was a really, it was one of the scenes that intrigued me the most because he makes such a strange, I don't know, it's such a strange scene, and he makes such a strange face, and then you kind of think about how many volts are running through him right then, and yeah, it makes it, anyway, it's an engaging little scene anyway, and it really does set the tone for what he's up to. He's trying anything to forget. So for the rest of the series, when you see him with a you know, three fingers of whiskey in a glass and pulling it back without taking a sip, you don't think twice about that because you've already watched this guy's version of escapism, and it involves electroshock therapy. A pack of cigarettes and a few fingers of whiskey a day, fuck it. That's a good day.
Right. Now, I do want to mention a couple of things. I loved the episode where the preacher grabs the angel wing.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. That was genuinely good.
Such a good episode, and I didn't think it was going to be when it first came on. Like, when I first started watching it, I didn't think it was going to be like, oh, man, we're going to deal with some
Pentecostal
backwards snake
nonsense.
Yeah, backwards snake handling, you know, douchebag. And then it grabbed me, man. It became a really good story.
Even
with
that,
even
that
usual
poor preacher
suspects,
actually
like, twist
gets to you
at the end.
No, that poor preacher, that he's once upon a time, I remembered his name. It's long gone. But that poor bastard, what he gets you in one little moment where he's trying to preach, and you can tell he just doesn't have the gravitas to really pull it off. And he actually stops kind of mid-sermon and says, you know, I don't have the ability to bring this old book to life like my father did. And then you kind of stop and give him an extra few points, you know?
Yeah. And what was fun is I kind of, like, the chick that was always there with him, I don't know if that was his sister or his wife.
I've watched the episode at least 3 times, and I still don't know.
Which is kind of perfect for that setting. It's kind of perfect.
It had that feel to it, yeah. Yeah. It wasn't as the worst part. The worst possible paintings of the South involve a lot of incest.
Yeah.
I can say most of which is absolutely nonsense. But
yeah, yeah.
But I understand the archetypes. And in this case, you know, once you've dug that deep into an archetype, I kind of, you know, I would wonder myself. And then you have a couple episodes later, the guy that's, well, and this is, it was a whimper to end on, the episode with the, it's the guy that has a bunch of teenage wives.
Oh, yeah, the man.
The polygamist slash pedophile.
Yeah, the Satanist pedophile, yeah.
Yeah, who, by the way, and, you know, I've, as many times as I've been to Louisiana, you know, probably three or four, I've never gone so deep into it that I can attest to whether that was a genuine accent or the weirdest thing I've ever heard. I don't know.
I've heard Louisiana accents that sound that way, but
that is some like South Louisiana bayou
dude,
shit, right?
Yeah,
there.
I have met a couple of people from Louisiana. I couldn't understand what the hell they were saying. They were worse than this dude. Like I couldn't, and it was the accent was right. Like I just couldn't understand what they were saying.
It's see,
just,
I've met several people from the absolute southest version of Louisiana, like the kind where you live, you know, negative 100 feet below sea level. And I understood what they were saying, but it was with such an accent that I felt like if I talked to their grandfather, he might as well have punched me in the face. And that would have been a better communique than anything he could have said.
Right. Well, you know, to the same effect, you know, we like, I know people, there are certain parts of Alabama. Like, you know, you go to Birmingham or Montgomery and everything, you can understand everything just fine. Mm-hmm. And most people, I mean, have kind of a bit of an accent, but then certain parts.
Yeah, if you...
certain parts. There's still, I mean, there are certain little towns in Alabama. Like, they just got power, like, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And these people, you can't hear, you can hear them. You just don't know what they're saying. They're speaking nonsense.
Yeah, there's little pockets where the poverty line is so far above them that it's a little speck in the sky that they can't even see anymore.
Yeah, it's not even an accent issue. They're using words that aren't our words. They
not part of the accepted English vernacular. Yeah,
I mean, if something is, you know, if something is close in proximity to another object, it's pert near. Right. I mean. What?
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I was down with that guy. And, I mean, I wasn't down with him because he was obviously a pedophile and a Satanist, but...
I was willing to assume that you weren't down with his pedophilia and Satan eye.
Right, right. But
you know,
the acting.
I've gotten to know you over time, Dave, so...
Yeah, I feel like I have to clarify that anyway, just across the board. Like, by the way... Like, not down with the pedophilic polygamy Satanism, but,
right, right.
You know.
Just put this out there.
One thing I did enjoy, though, about that, and it's an odd thing, but it's something I noticed, and I was kind of proud of him. Like, the pedophilic Satanist guy who has all the wives, I was like, well, he's a Satanist, and he's a pedophile, and mm-hmm. a polygamist, but at least he's not racist. Like, I was actually proud of him for that, for some reason. I was like, well, hey. Because deep south, you're going to think, you know, why don't they just, okay, he's a Satanist, he likes little girls, and he's a polygamist. Okay, well, he's probably racist, too. Let's just throw that on. But no.
But no, it was the picture of diversity. And that bed of swarming flies and slitted throats. Yeah, sure.
It was. And, you know, hey, with Hollywood
mm-hmm.
and with television, you know, you have to find the nimbus in that dark cloud of how they portray the South. And,
I mean, but I suppose
that's
he was already...
That's where I chose to find it.
He was already, you know, non-traditional, I suppose. His
right,
his preferred
right.
deity was Satan, and I forget which demon, but he had a preferred
right.
demon.
Right. There was some sort of a demon.
A trendsetter, that one.
But I was proud of him, though.
We're all going to be saying, Mercy Bacol, before we know it.
No.
Are we not?
No, we're not.
Are we not going to say that?
No. Well, at least not until Gambit comes out.
Are we not going to say merci beaucoup as though we were trying to hold an ounce of water in our tongue and can't use it properly the entire time?
Yeah, I just assumed he was trying to keep his teeth in his skull.
That's fair.
Is his teeth? He had like little baked bean teeth. He looked like they were about to fall out of his head any second.
I understand. No, and by the time Tatum's done, like mon frere will be a common usage.
Mon frere, mon
cher. It'll be hashtag mon frere before he's fucking done.
I really hope they don't do the thing that Chris Claremont did. Like, Chris Claremont was the writer who created Gambit in the X-Men comics, and they did a thing where he would have him say, you know, a phrase in French, and then the next thing out of his mouth would be the same phrase but in English, really annoying.
The word for that is haughty.
The word for that is poor writing. It's a phrase. It requires a full phrase. Poor writing. Oh.
Oh, all right. Now, it being that this has gone on for freaking forever.
Yes, it has. It has, and I was about to wrap that up.
So. I want to mention one thing as just a hey, did you notice?
Sure.
Did you notice where Richie works?
Where who?
Richie.
I mean, he was a professor at college.
Ivy University.
I don't remember. Okay.
That would seem to be one of those things where if you're going to pull him into specifically an Arrow universe where you already have an Atom, come on, come on.
All right.
Let Richie come on, too, and they can do the little alma mater dance and stuff. It'd be great.
Oh, why did you say that to me? Now I want that so much.
I can't be responsible for your dreams. I just can't. Yeah, I do. I do want to see. All right, the three things, I'm going to pick three things that I would like to see wrapped up by this series. And by this series, I mean Constantine. And where? I mean, wherever the fuck you can. I don't care.
Right.
Tell me where the story ends.
Sure, sure.
Don't make me infer from going back through the comics and guessing where you would... No, in the story. Like, draw it up. It doesn't take... It really, honestly, doesn't cost too much money. You draw it up. You put DC at the top. You send it out. I'll buy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to put aside the main character arcs, I suppose, and just do this. What the hell happens to Astrid? I want to know what happens to that little girl's soul.
Mm-hmm.
I have to know. I mean, it's the main, it's the focus of what he's, I have to know. Very much related, the Rising Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part, if you had to mention one thing on Arrow, if I have to have one thing you say as the throwaway line that says that Constantine has his own stuff to do. Just say you're dealing with the Rising Darkness or the First to Fall. Either way, I'm good. But the one that really the one that really kept tugging at me that I want to really know, Constantine and his mother. I really want to know what happens with that.
See, I want to know all of those things. And I also want to know about Zed. And I want to know about Chaz. And I want to know everything. I want to know Jim Corrigan. Jim Corrigan is the big one for me.
Well, he's the right hand of God's vengeance. Of course he's the big one.
I want to see Dr. Fate. Yeah. They teased that helmet. I want to see Dr. Fate.
Dr. Fate, the guy who could defeat the right hand of God's vengeance and his friend the stranger.
I know they didn't really talk about it, but I want to see Swamp Thing. I want to see Swamp Thing.
Dude, I know how much you want to see Swamp Thing, and I completely agree. But how much did you want to see the Phantom Stranger?
Yeah.
That's never happened. Really, no one's ever done a live Phantom Stranger.
No.
Like, this was the closest we ever got to a live Spectre. That's never been done.
I would say that we've never seen a live action Zatanna, but she was in Smallville and she was amazing. So actually, Dr. Fate was done really well in Smallville too.
There was a lot of stuff that was done well in Smallville. If you have, I don't know, the patience of a Galapagon sea turtle, I do not. I have a normal human lifespan.
Oh, come on, man. No, you watch Grimm. Shut up.
Yeah, but it's also important to know how far you can fall as both a show and a human being, and I'm learning that every week, every time I watch Grimm.
You watch Misfits.
Okay, that one I can defend and will. And there are at least a few people in the UK that will agree with me.
All right. Well, just imagine the first three seasons of Smallville as Grimm, and then the last, I don't know, 15 seasons of Smallville, whatever, however long they went. They went like
forever.
10 years, but like from like season 4 through on to the end of season 10, man, I mean, it's better than Arrow.
The last
6 years of that show are better than Arrow.
Yeah, the last six. But it was one of those things where when I kept thinking maybe I should try it, maybe I should try it, maybe I should do it, maybe I should do it. And I finally gave up when you said, if you can just get past the first, like, six seasons.
I did not say that. I said the first three seasons.
Is it the first three seasons of a one-hour, 22-episode show?
And I'm going to tell you this. Certain things happened a lot quicker than I remembered them happening.
Uh-huh.
So they actually start dealing with, like, real mythology-type episodes. Like, it is a completely different take on Superman than you've seen before, but it actually is pretty good. Like Clark finds some caves with, like, Kryptonian drawings on them, and, like, the Kryptonian, like, drawings start to move and whatnot. And
one of the Dukes of Hazzard tells him, no, that's totally cool, don't worry about it.
Oh, no, no.
Or is he already dead?
By the way, no, he's not dead at that point. But, man, John Schneider, or Schneider, what, Schneider, Schneider, whatever his name is. The
Schneider.
Dude, Schneider, yeah. He actually plays, he does a really good job. He is my favorite Jonathan Kent of all time.
Really?
Like, this dude is, like, the exact opposite of Kevin Costner.
I was about to say, don't struggle for Kevin Costner's name. For God's sake, he's an icon.
Sorry. Yeah, I know, well, kind of. But
No, he's been around for long enough that no one should struggle for his name. Man's paid his dues.
Yeah, he paid his dues. It was called The Postman and Waterworld.
I'm sorry. those are definitely dues. That's a check your soul at the gate kind of mechanism. As a kid who grew up in a field of dreams, though, I will always have a soft spot.
Well, yeah, but the John Schneider version of Pa Kent, like the early episodes, you are going to deal with some of the Costnerisms, like, you know, don't be special, blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
But like they have such a huge character arc for his character, like he's just so good, and he's not a dick either. So I'm going to stop talking about Smallville. We're talking about Constantine, and we're gonna wrap this.
We're also gonna wrap up and not talk about Constantine. I wanna persist though with the one point. Constantine was good.
Constantine was good, and it deserved
that's
another
the point
season
of
at
this,
least.
Right? That's the point of the entire wrap up.
Yeah,
is this was Constantine worth your time? Good.
By the way, just as an aside, if you guys want us to do a Smallville like recap or something at some point, you're gonna have to convince Jason with your comments because he's not gonna watch it otherwise.
I'm just not. I'm God. Oh, God.
So all you Smallville fans out there,
even if I was convinced to do it, which we are talking about a bunch of DC characters hanging out with each other, so by convincing me to do it, I don't mean it's going to take that much, but it would still be like one of those. It'd still be one of those "I'll see you next summer" kind of things.
Right, yeah, it'll have to be next summer, but it'll take that long for him to watch it. So if you guys really want us to do a Smallville recap or something next summer, and or just think Jason should watch it, let us know. Tell us, man. I think he does.
Which I'm going to rephrase as, let me know exactly how vindictive you are as a human being. Let me know just how petty you can possibly be and force me to watch this show. Because I'll do it. I'll fucking do it.
I don't know. He acts like he can't trust me here. I'm telling him what's bad and what's good. Come on. Anyway, we are DC on Screen. Please go watch Constantine. Find a way, because you're gonna enjoy it.
I'm not saying there's gonna be an ending. I'm not saying this is ever gonna end well for you. Maybe a thread that goes unraveled for the rest of your life, a shoestring that you trip on for the rest of your time on Earth. But so help me God, that's 13 good episodes.
It is 13 good episodes. It really is. We are DC on Screen. We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. If you're looking for a similar podcast about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, go over and check out the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, our friends Matt Carroll and Jeff Randall. I'm sorry, it's not us. We only have so much time in a week. Go check them out. And we're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. They are too. Give us 5-star reviews or 5-star ratings and reviews. It really does help us out a lot.
To be fair, they're as good in us as we could ever be.
I guess.
That's one of those Nolan lines. I've watched way too much of the Dark Knight trilogy.
Speaking of, we are about to get into, we're going to do a Dark Knight Rises review. And we might actually have Dark Knight posted by the time this is done.
It's but not even going to have a real title. It's just going to be called Vitriol.
So I really do. I hope you guys join us for our vitriolic review of The Dark Knight Rises.
There's so much hate to give.
And, God, we'll see you guys next week. And let us know about Smallville. Seriously.
Please don't.
Let us know. Like, do that. Until then, keep some DC on your screen, because clearly we're going to.